All right, here we go. Ready in the... Whoa, what's all the commotion in the booth? Okay, is everything settled down now? Is your disturbance handled? My goodness. Okay, look, focus. Are we focused, right? Levels up? Whew. Mayhem in the booth. Yeah, oh, don't worry about me. I'm ready. Are you ready? Talent out here is always ready. Oh, and I must say, a couple of podcasts ago, you did not tell me that I did not mention before we actually started the podcast about me saying my three S's. The three S's, of course, from Woody Allen's Broadway Danny Rose movie that he says to his clients. Broadway Danny Rose says, say your three S's, star, smile, strong. There. Now I said them. Now we can continue and make this podcast as professional, as entertaining as possible. Oh, and write it in the book. Number 133, podcast 133. Okay, let's do this thing. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Right here. And don't forget, go to that landing page where all previously 132 episodes of this podcast are posted right there at WGNplus.com. You go to the entertainment section, and then you hit Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. You will find all previous 132 episodes, which can only mean that this is episode 133. Yes, I am back. For episode 133 here. Wow. So before I get started, I just wanted to say that it is officially the Christmas season. We have officially entered the Christmas season. For those of you wondering, yes, my festive pin is now on my winter coat. I am officially festive. No, it is not a brooch. It is a festive pin. It is on the lapel of my black winter coat. I am officially in the Christmas mood. It is officially the Christmas season. Thanksgiving did come and go very quickly. I think these days, as soon as you finish a dessert on Thanksgiving, Christmas season starts, isn't it? And that's what I want to talk about today, is Christmas decorations. And I've talked to you about my decorations in the past, but there's something that's a little more troubling to me, and I'd like to share it with you. So here goes. My name is Jim. Hi, Jim. And I am a Santa addict. Now you say, Jim, what the heck is a Santa addict? Well, I have to say, just like going to an AA meeting and identifying yourself like I just did, not that I know for that of personal experience, but I am here to declare and to admit my Santa addiction. I am addicted to Santa Claus. I think I have an idea of how it started. I thought I had it under control, but something happened to me recently, and I just think that I am an addict. I don't know if I need help. I don't know if it's something that I definitely need to stop, but I am aware that it's there, and I am trying my best to at least curtail it, because I've spent probably 35 or 40 years being a Santa addict, and it's the one thing I can't control. If you've been listening to me over the last couple of years, I've been talking to you about how I have been decluttering in my life. I've been throwing away a lot of old things. My mom was a pack rat. I gained some of that pack ratishness, is that a word? From her, and I would collect a lot of things and keep a lot of things. I've said many times, I'm so glad for some of the things that my mom did save, But she also, you know, to find some of those diamonds in the rough, she saved a lot of stuff that didn't need to be saved. And I had to go through a lot of things thrown out of hers, unlike my dad, whose adage was, if you buy something new, then you throw something out. And I find now, as I've gotten older, I guess earlier in my life, I subscribed to my mom's philosophy of saving everything. And as I've gotten older now, I've subscribed to my father's philosophy of, if you buy something new, you throw something out. It's taken me 13 years to finally, you know, go through and get rid of a lot of my stuff that my mom saved of hers. It took me about 10 minutes after my dad passed away to get rid of his. He was very Spartan. He had what he needed and not much more. And it was interesting to have both of those in one house, because my mom saved everything and my dad didn't save very much. He saved a few little personal things, but he didn't save stuff like my mom. In fact, one time I tried to throw stuff out, and my mom was like, boy, you're so unsentimental. And I'm like, well, no, I'm really not. But there comes a time when you just can't keep saving this stuff. So I've been decluttering for the last year and a half, and it's been an amazingly liberating experience. And I would certainly recommend it to anyone out there. If you've got a lot of stuff in your basement and in your garage, I know it's not easy. But once you start throwing that stuff out, it's an amazingly liberating experience. And it really takes the weight off your shoulders, literally and figuratively. So I would recommend it to everybody. And so I have thrown out a lot of stuff over the last couple of years. And but I guess my point is today, I've been very good at not at saying no and continuing to filter things out. And the most importantly, by not getting new stuff, I'm not adding. I have subtracted and I have stayed at that level. I am not adding too much. And I've been pretty impressed with that. I didn't think it would be that easy, but I'm looking around and saying I like the organization of it. And I'm realizing that I went through my stuff with a very discerning eye, and I've kept what I need, because I've gone through the remaining bins that I have, and I've looked to see if I could throw more stuff out. And I'm like, you know, at this point in my life, I still think I want to keep some of this stuff. Maybe another 10 years, I go through another purge. But right now, I think I still need this stuff for whatever reason. So I've been very proud of myself, my self-governing in terms of not repeating the cluttering. I am in a declutter mode, and have been, and continue to be on that, and I'm proud of that. However, all of that pride and all of that focus and determination seems to go out the window when it comes to Santa Claus. I love Christmas decorations. I even threw out a lot of stuff that we didn't need and pared down some of the older Christmas decorations that we weren't using anymore, that were broken or was dated or whatever, just wasn't using anymore. I even went through that stuff, which was very difficult for me. But most of the stuff I threw out was non-Santa related. And I still have close to 20 bins, you know, those green bins with the red tops that they sell. I still have about 20 of those filled to the rim with Christmas decorations, and most of them are Santa's. I love Santa. I guess I've had a lifetime love affair with Santa from when I was a little kid. Some of the cool things that my mom did save, and I bless her heart for that. Thank you, Mom, wherever you are. Like, for instance, on my gifts when I was a little kid, dating back to my first birthday, I have my first Christmas cards of my first Christmas, you know, aren't from my aunts or my uncles, even from my parents, on my first Christmas. I still have the cards that they gave me. And on many of my gifts as I was getting older, my family and my parents would put, like, they had those you know, printed Santa faces that you see that you put in the windows. Well, they would put those on my presents and write on his beard, you know, to Jimmy. They actually called me Jim Jim when I was growing up. Jim Jim was my nickname in my family. And so, you know, And it was my first Christmas, second, third Christmas, and many of my aunts and uncles that gave me these, and my parents, they've all passed. So those are actually really kind of special, just to not only the age of them, they're over 50, you know, 40, 50 years old, but just the remembrance of those people. So I'm so glad she saved those. But they are Santa faces. So clearly my association with Santa goes back way, way back. I remember being a kid in grammar school, when I was like in third or fourth grade, I played Santa for the younger grades. And then many years later, when I was in my, probably my early, my late 20s, early 30s, I played Santa a couple of years for my my cousin's grammar school for the different grades. And that was fun. And I have pictures of that. And then whenever I make any promotional appearances at Christmas time, as if you've seen on my website, or if you've seen, or I mean, I'm on my Facebook page, or if you've attended any of the Christmas shows that we've done that I've been a part of, you'll see I have my Santa coat and my Santa hat. And I've been wearing Santa hats long before it became cool. Now you go out at Christmas time and you see people wearing Santa hats all the time. I've been wearing Santa hats for about 35 years around Christmas time out in the public when no one was doing it. But that's beside the point. My point is, I've just had a love affair with Santa. And I really love the Santa decorations. Now, I don't buy everything Santa. I am very selective in my Santa addiction. There are certain Santas that I like. I like the Coca-Cola Santas, for instance, the classic Santa look, you know. There's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Santa is from most recently is a drawing of Santa from the book Santa Calls by William Joyce. You can go online and look that up. William Joyce, Santa Calls. You'll see he's kind of a sophisticated Santa. He's got a monocle and a vest. He looks pretty cool. So I love that Santa. So I just don't buy any Santa around. It has to, and I can't even explain to you many times what it is, but I know it when I see it. And I, even in the midst of all of this decluttering, when it comes to this time of the year and I see a cool Santa, my name is Jim and I am a Santa addict. I can't stop from buying Santas. In fact, last year my wife and I went on a vacation over Christmas. And so we didn't get to actually even, by the time we got home, it was after Christmas. And I didn't even display these things. I found this year, as I was unpacking our Christmas decorations for this year, this bag of all these Santas that we bought on our vacation from different Christmas markets. Even more Santas. But it really hit home for me recently when I really come to say that I have to admit that I am a Santa addict. Now I don't know if I'm necessarily looking to kick this habit. I guess if I have to have one indulgence, then maybe it is this, my Santa addiction. I don't know if my Santa addiction is all that harmful. It is adding to the bins that I have of Christmas decorations. And that's the hard part. As I've said many times, my wife and I, we don't have any kids. So who's going to get all this? And there's some things that are really nice. Some of the things are a little expensive. I don't know if my godson's going to want them someday. I don't know who's going to get these things, but there's some really nice Santas here, folks. When I do collect, I do try to collect some really cool stuff. So I'm not sure what to do with it, but at the same time, so there's that side of me saying, Jimmy, have enough stuff. 20 bins of Santa is enough. And don't forget, now, there's not just me. My wife loves snowmen. So our house, basically, at the holidays, is a mix of Santas and snowmen. So there's a lot of red and white Santas and a lot of white snowmen all around our house. And then after Christmas is over, and even after I take down all the Christmas stuff and all the Santas go away, because it's still winter, from January through March, I still leave up all the snowmen in the house. So there's still some kind of wintry decorations, because I think snowmen certainly are associated with Christmas to some extent. Frosty, the big one, of course. But it's also winter, right? And so I still keep, so the house still has a little touch of seasonal decoration. So I keep all of our snowmen up while I take down all the rest of the Christmas stuff after the Christmas season is over, usually, you know, after the, I don't know, the first week of January. But I'll keep the snowmen up. So we've got a lot of snowmen and a lot of Santas, but the Santas are mostly mine, and my wife certainly indulges my Santa addiction. She's an enabler, and I love her for it, but she's an enabler. And I'll go, I know this is a great Santa. You know, she'll give me a Santa for Christmas or for my birthday. I'm like, yes, I know this is great, and I love it, and it's so cool, but we don't have the room. I get very... You know, at times, you know, when someone else buys me a Santa, I get a little like, oh, we don't need another Santa. But then when I see one, I'm like an addict. And I have to tell you, it happened to me last week, and that's why I'm talking about it today. I thought that I had my Santa addiction somewhat under control. But then I relapsed. I mean, I relapsed. I definitely relapsed. And it happened in a store. We went shopping for some Christmas things. And I don't necessarily look to buy them as much as I like to go to Christmas stores to get into the spirit at the beginning of the season. As I said, we are in the beginning. So this was actually just right around Thanksgiving time. We went and just to start to get into the mood. And I had my, you know, my festive pin on my coat. But to go to like a lot of stores that have just primarily Christmas things just helps me get in the mood. And I'm not there to necessarily buy anything, but just walking around, you see the trees, you see all the decorations, and it just starts to get your blood boiling. Excuse me. So we went to a couple of stores. And, you know, we'll go to some independent stores that have a lot of Christmas stuff, or even like, you know, standbys, your Hallmark stores. I've got a lot of my cool Santas from Hallmark, I must say. Not trying to give them a plug, just they make some cool Santas. Ornaments, as well as dolls, as well as, I mean, you name it. I just, if it's got Santa on it, you know, what can I say? My name is Jim, and I'm a Santa addict. So I've been, the last couple of years since in this declutter mode, I think I've been pretty good. While I have certainly bought some Santas, I certainly have not bought as many Santas as I possibly could have. I'll tell you that much. And I've said no to some. And my wife has even said, wow, so you're not going to buy that, huh? And I'm like, no, we don't need it. And at those moments, I feel proud of myself and I feel a little Scrooge-ish too. Because, you know, if you can't let yourself go at the holidays, then when can you, you know? But I've just seen the positive results of not cluttering, and I know how fast and easy it is to get cluttered again, and so I am diligent on my cluttering until it comes to Santa. And I mean, I recognize, and I will indulge, yes. As I said, last year, we bought all these little Santa ornaments, nothing huge, but still, you know, do I really need them? I don't know. Do we have any place for them? I don't know. But at the time, oh, look at that cool Santa. And it's got to be a specific kind of Santa, like I said. Well, we went to this one big place that almost like a warehouse of Christmas stuff, had some great stuff. And for the most part, I didn't go crazy. I mean, for instance, they had a life-size Santa that sits in a chair that you could buy for your living room. It was called a sit-down Santa. And this thing was pretty cool. Now, you know, it costs like $800. Okay, that I don't need. But boy, and I, you know, and it's way too expensive to even justify putting out for a month, because that's basically what are you going to use it for? But my gosh, at the same time, I'm saying, boy, would that be cool to have. But I've been able to say no to those big ticket kind of things that are a little over the top. But when it comes to an ornament or a doll, that really strikes my fancy. It's so hard to say no. But at least I'm saying no to the big ticket items that are over the top. And maybe in another time, in another place, I would have said yes. But I'm not saying yes anymore to those things. But my obsession and my addiction is still present. So we did pretty well there. And the only thing I can remember really buying from there was this cool picture. It was a painting. Not very big, maybe 10 by 10 inches, of this very unique kind of old-looking, thinking kind of Santa that just was so different. It wasn't cartoonish. It was a very lifelike Santa. And it just it just grabbed my eye. And so we did buy that. And that is hanging up now in the house. And then, of course, at the same place, if you've listened to me on the radio at all, you know, over the last several years, I've been invited to Dean Richards' WGN Christmas show on the radio from Treetime Classics, from Treetime Creations. And we've been singing the 12 Days of Christmas. And my line of the 12 days, you know, on the first day of Christmas, that song, my line has always been the five golden rings line, which I have always delivered with great, great enthusiasm and bravado. So I just don't go five golden rings. I say five golden rings. And sure enough, we found an ornament that had a goose with five golden rings on his beak. So he had to buy that, right? I mean, you give me that one, right? I mean, it's the five golden rings. That's my line. I've made it famous now. Yeah, right. And we did okay. Just bought this one little Santa picture, which, to be honest with you, is so cool that my wife even said, you know, we should just keep that up all year. It's really cool. We might just do that. So I was pretty proud, even though I did indulge my Santa addiction. It wasn't crazy. And I had our decorations up in the house, and our house is awash in red and white between the snowmen and the Santas. In fact, on our stairway to go up to the second floor, up the stairs, every alternate stair has a Santa and a snowman from the bottom to the top. Santa, snowman, doll. And throughout the house, there's just Santas everywhere. And snowmen. But, I mean, we have no more room. I mean, that's the other side of a coin. It's not just the you know, I don't want to buy anymore. We just don't have enough room to put anything anymore. So I'm like, you know, we should just be, let's just celebrate what we have. We have some really cool stuff. And I don't want to sound like Scrooge. And I know, like I said, my wife likes to buy me these things. She's an enabler. But I'm like, please don't, because there's nowhere to put them. Until I see one that just makes me lose all control. And I become a Santa addict all over again. And that's what happened to me on our second stop. Once again, no plugs here. For anything more than just this is the reality of the story. We went to Hallmark. They have great, you know, they always have really cool Santa ornaments, and they have some cool Santa dolls that we've gotten there in the past. Well, I walk in with my wife to the Hallmark store, and right when you walk in, on this display table is this maybe 2-foot Santa, this stuffed Santa, like a doll, with the coolest beard and this coolest red suit. It's just from the waist up. Go on the Hallmark.com website and you'll see what I'm talking about. I think he's called the In Evergreen Santa. I think that was the name of it. Santa in Evergreen. Look that up. I think you'll find it on there. He's just this round, soft, chubby Santa with this great face. Got the bag slung over his shoulder. It's made so well. Cool eyebrows, cool beard, great outfit. When I walked in, I made an audible sound of lust, I believe. My wife, after we bought him, she said, you know, you actually groaned when you saw that Santa, like, oh, like, you know when Homer Simpson sees a donut? Oh, that's how the sound I made when I saw this Santa is all for all the Santas that I have at home. And this is not by far the greatest Santa of all time, but it grabbed me. And as soon as I walked in, I saw it. I was not expecting or intending to buy anything at this store. As I said, for the most part, we were just visiting these stores to sort of jumpstart our Christmas spirit. And if we saw something, perhaps you'd buy something. But for the most part, it was more psychological, just to jumpstart the Christmas season in our minds and in our hearts. Until I saw this Santa in Evergreen at Hallmark. He was staring at me. I think I actually heard him talk and say, "Take me home, Jim." I think I heard that. I think I saw his lips move, and I think I heard him say, "Take me home, Jim." I'm not for certain, but I almost did hear it. But according to my wife, and I didn't even realize I did this, I did make an audible sound of pleasure. Oh, she said, "Oh my God, when we walked in the store, you made this sound, and I saw what you were looking at, and I thought it was a cool Santa too, but I knew that that you were going to buy that. Because I said, oh my gosh, what's he looking at?" And then when I saw that, no, it wasn't a hot woman in the store. It was a Santa. That's what I was groaning and lusting over. And so sure enough, I said, "Well, I don't know. I think we're going to have to get him." And we circled around him for a while. And it was so funny because then I said, "Well, no, we don't know if we really need." I was going through that. No, no. And then I think the store only had one. And so then we were the only ones at the store at the time we walked in. And as we stayed in there for a while, more people walked in, and it's right there at the door. And so then you get into that competitive mode of, what if somebody buys him before I take him? I mean, I know I want him. I'm kind of doing this debate in my mind, but at the end of the day, I know I'm going to buy him. I'm always like that. I know I want to buy this thing, and I debate with myself, and I think I've talked about this before. Sometimes I'll actually leave the store and have to come back the next day because it's driving me crazy I didn't buy it. Just buy it. But I always do these internal battles with myself. And on my Santa addiction, I'm trying my hardest to fight my addiction. No, but the Santa was so cool. So then when more people start coming in the store, I get a little paranoid. I'm like to my wife, "You better go over there and just take them. Tell them we want them before anybody else, you know, lays their hands on them." That's how we were with our cat, Grimsby. I saw our cat Grimsby at the shelter, and I knew that we were going to get her. And we took her out, and we held her, and we were doing that. We put her back in the, you know, in the cage. And then other people walked in, and they started to walk because she's such a pretty cat. That she at least demanded attention of anybody walking in. You'd have to look at her. Whether you were going to adopt her or not is another question. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with that. But if you're even there to buy a cat or just look. But you have to look at her. She's that pretty. She's got these amazing blue eyes and these striking markings. And so everybody would have to look at her. And while we were there, someone was looking at her. And then we got all defensive. And we were like, "Oh, we better. And we did walk out of the place. And then I said, as we were in the car, I said, "We're going to get that cat, aren't we?" And we debated it, and we got home, and we called them back and said, "Remember we were there? Could you put her on hold? We're going to come back." I mean, I do this all the time. So I was feeling very paranoid that someone was going to buy my Santa, my Evergreen Santa from Hallmark that day, even though I'm sure I could have got it online, right? I mean, I'm still in that old mode too. Everything's online, Jim, but he was there, and I got news for you. If I saw him online, I might not have bought him. Because I've seen his picture online now, and it looks cool, but I don't know if I would have had the same visceral reaction of seeing him in person and how well he was made and how just cool he looked. But when I saw him there, I knew I had to have him, and I relapsed. I relapsed into my Santa addiction. My name is Jim, and I am a Santa addict, and I just mainlined on this Santa. I just had to have him. And so I have to say, he looks great. He's sitting right in front of the fireplace. He moved over another Santa. We had one of my other favorite stuffed Santa dolls with a reindeer. Used to have that exalted spot right in front of the, in the middle of the fireplace. And now this new Santa shares the mantle, well, not the mantle, but the floor right in front. So I had to push that other Santa and the reindeer over to the left to make room for this guy too. So now they both share the front of the fireplace. But it's a Santa obsession. It's a Santa addiction. I have been so good in the other areas of decluttering. But when it comes to Christmas and Santa, I don't know. As I said, I have a long, long love affair with Santa. And I don't know. Is it just something I should indulge? Or should I just really fight the urge? I just love Santa so much. I don't know what to do except to say that my name is Jim, and I am a Santa addict. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. And now we take a stroll over to the Pop Culture Club section of the podcast. And there, sitting next to a microphone, feeling better and energized than she has in the last couple of weeks, is our regular pop culture guru-ess, Emily Armonetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
So you sound much better, less nasal.
Yes, I'm getting better every day.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. Yeah. It's no fun being sick, that's for sure. So good to have you
back.
No,
this flu is... It is relentless this year. I can say that.
All right. Well, last week we heard all about your flu shots and your pediatricians, and we certainly have got our fill on your latest bout with the flu. So we are well aware of that. Speaking of bouts, though, in the Pop Culture Club, what I wanted to talk about today was an interesting kind of quagmire that a popular comedian found himself in. And it's almost a cautionary tale, as we have spoken many times here in the Pop Culture Club, about the new normal and the new reality of sort of speaking out and saying what's on your mind. We are certainly in the social media world, and while it is cool to talk and say things and share your opinion, what we're finding is if your opinion is not what a lot of people agree with, then you're still in trouble.
Right.
I mean, when I want to talk about here, I was very surprised a couple of weeks ago, the noted comic book writer, and we should say, Stan Lee, who passed away, was the driving force of Marvel Comics back in the 60s. He created Spider-Man and the Incredible Hulk and Thor, Justice League, the Fantastic Four, all these iconic comic book figures that have now gone on to become the biggest movie stars of the last 20 years. Forget about, Bruce Willis or Tom Hanks. It is Thor, Iron Man, Batman, Superman, all these superheroes. And many of them, as I said, from the Marvel comic worlds came from Stan Lee. So he passed away at 95. He's become something of a national hero for many people. He always is a cameo in a lot of the movies, in most of the movies. But he passed away at 95. And as I said, he was exalted in the last 20 years of his life as being this major pop culture icon for creating these original characters that were sitting on a shelf for many years, and finally Hollywood discovered them. And they've really, turned into the major engines for the movie world now. Now, are you
a juggernaut?
Yeah. Are you a superhero fan of the movies? Like, are you a fan of the superhero movies?
No, I'm not. I mean, look, I grew up on Superman, when Superman kind of originally, Christopher Reeve.
With Christopher Reeve, right, yeah.
Right. The Christopher Reeve films, the ones that were so popular in, what was that, kind of late 70s, early 80s, right, kind exactly. of that time
yeah.
frame.
Yeah.
But I'm not like a huge comic book person, but I have to say I do like Stan Lee. And I think, you know, like you said, he definitely, even for people who weren't super into comic books, he definitely had a presence. He had a presence in Hollywood. He had a presence in pop culture. So I completely get his legacy. And he also seemed like a sweet old man, you know, just a real sweet old guy. So, you know, I was sad to hear.
Well, what was cool.
But I'm not like a big, you know, I'm not a big comic book aficionado.
And it was cool to see someone like Stan Lee, who had been, as I said, you know, kind of a forerunner in the comic book world, and did create these very well known characters, to finally find, you know, mass appeal fame, you know, into his 70s. I mean, that's when the name, you know, because these comic books and these comic book heroes had been around for, you know, 40 years.
Right.
And when people in the industry of comic books knew who Stan Lee was, but he certainly wasn't a mainstream kind of figure. And now he certainly has become that. And it was a big deal when he passed away.
Yes.
And I understand you were saying, we were talking before, that even like celebrities were showing, like posting all their pictures that they took with him over the years.
Yes, that's right. A lot of celebrities were posting like on Instagram or on Twitter, their tributes to him with, and you know, a lot of them had crossed paths with him over the years. I mean, there are a lot of celebrities that kind of have played some of these characters in movies. I mean, like Mark Ruffalo. How do we say that?
Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo. Come on, you're Italian.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know if Iron Man was Marvel, but certainly.
He definitely was. That was his.
Okay. So, you know, Robert Downey Jr. was Iron Man. Even Gwyneth Paltrow was in those films. There's a whole slew of celebrities that have in recent years, and you know, more like, you know, kind of verging on A-list, or you know, kind of what we consider to be very, very more serious actors. I mean,
well, that franchise brought Robert Downey back.
Oh, back! I mean, gosh, he's probably one of the highest earners in Hollywood right now because of Iron Man. If you think about it, right?
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. So, I mean, what I wanted to talk about was Bill Maher, the comedian who has a very popular show on HBO, and he's very political. He's very progressive.
Isn't his show called Politically Incorrect?
Well, it used to be. That was the other one.
It used to be,
and he got in trouble. Yeah, that was the one that was on ABC. Now I think it's, you know,
but he's still. Okay, so he doesn't call his show Politically Incorrect anymore.
Right, but he's still very progressive, left wing.
Yeah,
and he will sometimes cross the aisle, but he's a very far left, you know, anti Trump, you know, kind of guy, which certainly appeals with many of the younger people in their 30s and 40s who are in that kind of political mindset. So Bill Maher, even though he's probably close to 60, if not over 60. Is kind of become the new Jon Stewart, who was kind of, you know, the older guy leading the way for a younger audience and talking about more, you know, liberal or right wing or left wing kind of issues and you know, and commentary. So what was so funny was that at the same time, while that group of people, the millennials, if you will, I think liked Bill Maher, and that's great if you're someone in your 60s who can find a way to touch the millennial audience. That's great for you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it just goes to show you that in today's world, though, as much as you think you have friends, they are just as quick to turn on you as they are to exalt you.
Right.
And so Stan Lee passed away, and there was quite a big to-do about his passing. And so Bill Maher, in a blog, wrote how he was kind of surprised and actually it sounded like, you know, a little discouraged that such a big deal was being made about Stan Lee, because in Bill Maher's mind, all this guy did was write, you know, write comic books. He didn't draw them, by the way. We shouldn't note that out. He did not draw the characters. He just wrote them. He created the storylines and wrote it, but he did not draw them. But anyway, so, you know, as I said, I listed those people, you know, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Hulk, Thor, Fantastic Four, all these things have become major movies. And so he's like, but, you know, why are we making such a big deal? This guy wrote comic books, and Bill Maher was kind of showing his age by saying, you know, when I was a kid, comic books were looked at as the lowest form of literature, if literature at all, and you basically read comic books until you really learned how to read and you moved on into serious literature. So he's kind of, you know, poo-pooing the comic book world, kind of talking down to what Stan Lee did. And then he got into a rant just about millennials in general, talking about, you know, the dumbing down, you know, the rise of the comic book has gotten into the dumbing down of America, and we're celebrating dumb stuff now. And there's a whole group of people now that think that when they buy auto insurance that they're becoming that makes them adults. So he sort of went off, used the Stan Lee thing and went off. And my gosh, did he get pummeled in the social media by people of this of the millennial group, and especially people who are huge, you know, comic book superhero fans, who said, wait a minute, you are way off base. And it's going to be interesting to see now, because here is this guy who really had a nice little niche with that same age group. And I wonder how this is going to hurt his career. And we talked about this many times. You know, what was the point of him saying this?
Right. Well, you know,
Did he have to say this?
Maybe he's trying to get a reaction, though. I mean, I think Bill Maher does try to be a little bit politically incorrect. And, you know, of course he's going to offend people by saying that. I mean, we clearly, the whole world of comic books has a massive following. I mean, if you think about, again, we just mentioned, all, like, Hollywood practically revolves around churning out movies based on
that's what
characters.
They're even finding that's now, they're finding even these lesser characters, because they have to find... They can't just keep making the same Spider-Man movie.
But they'll keep going back to the well. And you're right, though. They'll find any angle to go back to the well and make more money. And so clearly that there's a massive audience for this and there's a massive appetite for it. Now, I think Bill Maher is maybe being a little bit closed-minded about the whole thing, because I am sure that there's a case to be made for comic books and their importance in pop culture and even their importance in literature. I mean, there's nothing saying that you can't explore. And I'm sure many, like I said, I don't read comic books myself, but I have a general understanding. And I have a feeling that for people who are really into them, I have a feeling that there are some pretty deep themes that they explore, you know? So I think it's a little bit short-sighted of Bill Maher to just make an assumption that this is all just, you know, dumbed down literature, because I don't actually think it really is necessarily.
Well, the thing that I read most, as I said, I'm not a huge comic book fan. And I even talked about this, I think, in the last couple of, podcast. I'm not a big superhero fan, and that's one reason why I haven't gone to a lot of movies over the last 20 years. But I think, to your point, I do understand why Stan Lee has been sort of deified in many circles. Now, the funny thing is, I mean, Bill Maher is older than me, but we're probably not too far, he might be 10 years older than me, but I still understand where he's coming from. When I was a kid, comic books they cost 10 cents. I mean, they were printed on the cheapest paper you could find.
Right, right.
The ink came off in your hands. They were sold in, you know, dime stores and drug stores and corner stores. They were on a little rack that spun. And as I said, they were 20 cents, 50 cents maybe. They were very cheap. They had a glossy cover. And they really were kind of throwaway things. You'd buy one for 10 or 25 or 30 cents. It would take you, you know, half hour to read it. And you would either keep it if you really were like a collector or something like that. Or you'd just throw it away. It was very disposable.
Right.
Then, as he says correctly, you know, about 20, 25 years ago, there was, you know, now you tell me, because you're younger than I am. So when you were growing up, do you remember He-Man?
Absolutely.
Yeah, see, now I think, now that, remember that He-Man? That was very popular.
Yeah, He-Man was pretty big when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's why I'm bringing that up. So He-Man was very big in the mid-80s, and it wasn't like it is today. But I really believe that for whatever reason, He-Man became popular, and there was Skeletor and all that stuff. With
Skeletor, I totally remember yeah, Skeletor.
Right.
Yes, you're
right. That really was all involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That somehow that whole kind of superhero thing got a revival. And then, obviously, by the late 80s, you had the Batman movie. The Tim Burton Batman movie, and that really started it all. But this He-Man thing really was kind of the impetus to bring back this whole idea of the superhero, because it really was not in fashion for many years. I remember being a kid in the 70s on Channel 44 here in Chicago, which was one of those bad UHF stations that you couldn't even get in with your antenna.
Right.
They would have these cartoons of Iron Man and Spider-Man and the Incredible Hulk and Thor, and they all had little theme songs. I remember, you know, the one for Iron Man was Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel. You know, I mean,
I can't believe you remember that.
Oh, I totally remember. Yeah, it was the ever-loving Hulk. You know, Dr. Banner, dealt with by Banner, raised turns into the Hulk. Ain't he young? I mean, it was like the whole thing. But they were on, and they were cheap cartoons. Even Spider-Man was cheap cartoon when it was on in the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
And it sort of went away. And then once
but even I have to say, the Batman with Adam West, the Batman TV show.
Oh yeah,
which I think originally aired like in the 60s, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I distinctly remember watching. They were obviously reruns of that, but watching that all the time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like just as we watched like reruns of the Brady Bunch.
Oh yeah, and that show was hugely popular when it started. This, now I was too young when that was on. I saw them on in second run in reruns as well. Mm-hmm. But I do remember. I must have liked it, because I do have one of the original Batman albums that my mom kept for me. So that had to be, you know, I was alive. I just wasn't aware yet. You know
so was
I mean?
That a soundtrack of
yeah.
Adam West show?
Well, it was the music. It was the music.
Right. Well, remember the opening credits thing was the da-na-na-na.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was, yeah. Oh, that was, yeah, by Neil Hefti. Believe me. That was, da-da. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still have that. So, yeah. There's no doubt that it's always been in the pop culture world. But what I did find is this. You know, this He-Man thing, you know, brought back this whole idea of the superhero in the cartoon. And so don't forget now, if you are in your late 30s or early 40s now, you were a young little kid in the mid-80s. So I would assume that you grew up with He-Man. And then after that, if this resurgence happened, and all of a sudden then there's the Batman movie in 89, even if you were 4 or 5 or 6, you know, you probably heard about it, and then that started the Hollywood's kind of recognition of it. So now those people are in their 30s and 40s, and they grew up with it. And like I said, in my era, and maybe in Bill Maher's era, comic books were just this throwaway. But they certainly have evolved, and I also believe, as part of the millennial kind of perspective, if you remember about 10 or 15 years ago, they started calling them graphic novels.
Yes.
Now, graphic novels are just comic books on a better grade of paper.
Right.
And better, you know, a harder cover, a better grade of paper, and better art. And that's all. That it's still a comic book. It's just that it's hard bound, and there's no such thing as a graphic novel. It's a comic book. But I think 30 or 40-year-olds didn't want to make it look like they were still buying comic books. So they had to change the name. But,
right, because you don't want to seem sad.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, so, let's call it for what it is. But I think that Bill Maher, you know, I'm just wondering now, you know, we are in a sharing, you know, social media world. There's no question about that. I thought that Bill, I mean, I never thought of this, but it's a good point what you're saying. So, you know, if Bill Maher wanted to, you know, to shake the dust up a little and get a reaction, then he certainly succeeded.
Yeah.
But I'm also wondering, I mean, do we have to be careful? And I would think that someone like Bill Maher, if this really, if he was blindsided by this, I thought he'd be savvy enough to know, especially since he's a critic of the pop culture world to some extent, or at least an observer and a commenter on it. You've got to know, and you had to have seen other people that have gotten in trouble for creating a controversy that didn't even need to be created.
Right. Well, look, you're not allowed to say anything online at all anymore. Because, or if you do, you just have to be prepared for what's going to come. So this, I mean, when you told me about the Bill Maher thing, which I hadn't even heard about, you know, I immediately thought, well, oh, okay. After Stan Lee died, actually somebody else stepped in it online over his death, but it was actually Armie Hammer. Okay, you know Armie Hammer? Yeah. He was in Call Me By Your Name. Yeah. He's been in a bunch of other stuff.
Well, he was Spider-Man, wasn't
so
he?
So he... No.
Oh, Armie no, that Hammer, was Garfield. Was that was the other guy, Garfield. Yeah.
So he... I think he has worked with Stan Lee. I think he most recently was one of the people who most recently worked with him, I believe. But basically, now he got in trouble. He had another celebrity calling him out online because... He basically tweeted something very sarcastically saying like, oh, I'm so touched by all the celebrities posting pictures of themselves with Stan Lee. Like, no better way to commemorate a legend than putting up a picture of yourself. Which, okay, I mean, to me that seems like an odd reaction too, because like, you know, if any celebrity, like, let's say Mark Ruffalo or Gwyneth Paltrow or, you know, let's say... Robert Downey Jr., if any of them post a picture of themselves with Stan Lee because he was a colleague of theirs, they really liked him, he's passed away, they want to say something about it, what is so wrong with that? You know, but and I don't see what's the point of even making your comment. But then after he posted that, so Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who I think is on The Walking Dead, is probably most well known for.
Yeah.
So then he decided to comment back to basically say, like, hey, looks like you found a way to use
right.
this as to draw some attention to yourself, you know? Like, you sound like a real...
Right.
He didn't say jerk, but we'll right. say jerk. So now this started a whole thing, okay? And it is, I guess it is the point that, you know, you can't... You have to watch what you say online or just be prepared that there's going to be someone out there or maybe a bunch of people out there who are just not going to agree with what you're saying.
Well,
and they're going to let you know.
I think that's, but see, I think what's so funny is that the social media in theory is supposed to be this great, democratic, you know, kind of entity where everybody is allowed to say what they want and express themselves. And in theory, that's what it is. However, what we have found once the human element gets involved, that if your opinion is not with the majority, then you're going to get slammed. And I think, like I said, to get back to Bill Maher, and like in this part with Armie Hammer, you know, then you get slammed. You know, you look at the kind of different layers that people then look. Oh well, look at, you know, the way they attacked him.
Well, right. But at the same time, I have to think to myself, like, Armie Hammer, I mean, and I think he did apologize for it, but it's like he actually did. So now suddenly the focus is on, oh, he right. said this or whatever. And really, everyone's just trying to say, oh, Stan Lee died. We're really sad about it. He was a great guy. I worked with him or I really liked his work or whatever it is. And that's really just the point. You know, I mean, if Armie Hammer wants to say to his wife, like, oh, gosh, isn't this so, like, you know, isn't this so typical? Like, all these celebrities are posting pictures of themselves and it's so narcissistic and it's all about them. But why do you have to put something on Twitter?
Well, and as I said, and I think, like I said, Bill Maher comes out and, you know, I think where he got in trouble, if you read the text of his blog, where he got in trouble is he started to mix – you know, two different topics. Now, I think in his mind, they made sense in the way they flowed. You know, and the dumbing down, and then he's getting to more of a you know, this kind of millennial adulting thing. But the whole idea of Stan Lee somehow being, you know, responsible.
Like not being worthy of this.
Yeah, of this. And then somehow being responsible for the dumbing down of society and then the irresponsibility of some millennials. You know, I mean, I guess you can make a dotted line, but I don't know if it's a clear, you know, a thick line in the connections. And that's where I think, you know, some people get, you know, they get lost because if you're going to, I said this many times, you know, even on Facebook, you know, and I'm not, and I try to keep that more of just a promotional stuff of what I'm doing. But every so often I'll make a little comment. And there's a lot of times when I write a fairly kind of opinionated thing and I read it over and I do say to myself, okay, wait a minute. Before I send this.
Yeah.
Do I really want to your point, you know, withstand the slings?
Yes.
That I'm going to get? Is it that important to me to get this out, or should I at least soften it? Now, Bill Maher, I'm sure he's going to have to contend with this for a while. Now, I'm sure he's going to say, hey, you know, that's the way I feel, and that's what I am, and I am a commentator, and I'm going to say, and that's fine. But in today's, the other side of the coin is, though, in today's world, and you could stand by your guns, and I give you credit for doing that. But then also don't be surprised if your career takes a major hit.
Yeah.
Because one thing we've seen, I think, is that the average kind of audience in today's world is very fickle. You know, people will, it's almost as if, you know, they're your fans today. But if you say something that I disagree with you, I mean, it's great when we're all in the same tent.
Look out.
Then we're all great. But if you sort of step out of line and you don't toe the company line, you are banished forever. And it's different than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Because now, literally, the whole world can banish you.
Well, that's the thing. 30 or 40 years ago, word didn't travel so fast. Not everything was amplified the way that it is now. You know, so, I mean... this is the world we live in now.
So what do we do? So I guess my question to you is that from a pop culture, because I'll be honest with you, when I read the text of what Bill Maher said, I understood completely what he was saying, because as I said before, we're probably around the same age, and I feel the same way. I don't condemn people that read comic books. I'm not one of them. But I understand why the appeal is so big now. It's not my cup of tea, so I'm not involved in it. I don't go to the movies, I don't read the comic books. But at the same time, I can certainly respect and understand why some people do, and I understand why Stan Lee became what he was now in the last 20 years. So the question is, you know, do you say this, or do you curb yourself? You could look at it and say, well, hey, I don't care. You know, this is my opinion, and that's great. You know, so I don't know.
Well, I think from a pop culture
standpoint, is that good? Or at least from a cultural standpoint, is it good that I may have to edit myself because I'm afraid of the consequences, or should I, whether it's, you know, it's not with the norm, you know, with the majority or not, should I not stand up for what I believe? I mean, is Bill Maher, you could disagree. I guess my point is you can disagree with what Bill Maher said, but you shouldn't disagree with his right to say it.
Well, that's true. I mean, look, I think the bottom line is it depends on who you are and what you're saying. I mean, Bill Maher saying, hey, why is everyone making such a big deal out of Stan Lee? And he contributed to the dumbing down of our society, which I agree with you. I think he's conflating two issues completely there. And then as a separate issue with what he said, I believe he is underestimating the importance of comic books in popular culture.
Yeah.
But that said, Bill Maher, you know, that part of his role you know, is to say what he thinks, and whether it's going to be popular or not. So I think, you know, yeah, sure, I guess he should be free to speak his mind. I mean, what he's saying is, it's offensive in the sense that when people like Stan Lee's passed away, they're trying to pay tribute to him. Let's not act like, hey, why are we celebrating this guy? Like, that's, I'm not really on board with that. But again, if that's his opinion, you know,
maybe it was, and maybe it was just, but it was too soon. If you're going to sort of, you know, say that, right, then maybe you wait. I'll be honest with you.
Well, and I also don't think Bill Maher really cares when he, because this is not his first.
Oh, no, no.
This is not his first rodeo when it comes to putting his foot in it. And I don't think he cares. I think he probably sees that as part of what he does. You know, that's.
Well, but don't forget, he made a comment. At the reason why he, you know, mentioned Politically Correct, that was a show that he had, a little talk show that was on, you know, late night on ABC, a network. Yeah. And he said that the 9/11 bombers were not cowards. And he said it was pretty brave of these guys to get into a plane and drive into those towers. And that was right at the height of the post 9/11, you know, kind of making sense of everything. And that's why that show got canceled. So,
I also think that's far more offensive than what he said.
I understand that, but I agree with you that's his job. But then, as I said before, then he better realize that could affect his career or his standing with a lot of people, because in that case, he lost his job over that comment.
Sure, exactly, yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so I'm just wondering, you know, the problem is, there's really, the line is very difficult to know. Now, it was funny, I was very shocked at when John McCain died recently.
Yeah.
I was shocked at the national mourning that was going on for a
really?
Week.
Really? I wasn't.
Well, I mean, for a week, we saw John McCain. He had three different funerals, and he was all over the place. And my point of view was, you know, this guy ran for, I mean, you would think he was a president.
Right.
Okay. He was a senator. That's no small thing. I understand that. But he ran for president twice and lost.
Well,
if everybody loved this guy so much and he was so amazing, then why didn't he ever become president? Because of the fact that he wasn't that popular. But I believe that he became popular because Trump, he was, you know, Trump nailed him, you know, and disparaged him. And the media then, many people who hated John McCain on the left became big fans of John McCain, because now John McCain was a Trump enemy. And I really believe
right,
that John McCain.
I believe a lot of John McCain's legacy, more of his legacy, is based on, you know, it's not just his service as a senator, which he did serve for what?
It was Vietnam. I understand that.
I mean, he was seen as a leader in the Republican Party in many ways, but also the fact that he was a prisoner of war. He was.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
A Vietnam War hero, you know, and which I don't think many, if he had just been a senator for many years, never run for president, I don't think people like I wouldn't appreciate that about John McCain, and I maybe wouldn't have even known that, because I don't live in Arizona.
Right.
I don't pay attention to what's happening in Arizona particularly, you know.
Yeah.
But I think because John McCain ran for president a couple of times, as a nation, we knew a lot about him. And I think that is something more so than his feud with Trump. I think that elevated him a lot in the minds of Americans.
Oh, I certainly did. But I also think that it also that the fact that he was in this atmosphere, that him being a Trump enemy certainly helped elevate his standing. My point is, with the people on the left, on the Democrats and the liberal side, who hate. Don't forget, John McCain was one of Barack Obama's most fiercest critics.
I know. But this is what people like about John McCain. It's that John McCain, you know, he was always billed as a maverick, right? And he's been a leader in the Republican Party. That said, and I think this is what people, you know, I mean, I think anyone, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, you can at least respect this about him. He was never afraid to criticize even people in his own party, even Donald Trump, when he didn't agree or he didn't think what was happening was right. And it didn't matter to him that he was a Republican.
No, I understand all that. I guess
he didn't feel like he had to follow the party line when he didn't feel something was right.
I understand all that. But my point is that the Democrats, and especially the Democratic Party and a lot of Democrats, and especially even the far left, who were not fans of McCain at all, for many years, then all of a sudden became John McCain fans, right, when Trump said that he wasn't a war hero.
Well, and yes, and I think that I'm not surprised by that reaction of people's this reaction of maybe trying to, I don't want to say come to his defense in a way, because I'm sorry, I don't care who you support or what policies you support. You cannot tell me that John McCain's not a war hero.
Oh, there's no question. No, that was a ridiculous. So, I mean, no, and that was
no
a
re- way,
yeah. That was a ridiculous.
No way that people on both sides. You could be as far left as you could get, but of course you're going to come to the defense of someone.
And the only reason I bring up John McCain is because, and I said this on the radio, and I took some hits for it, and I was fine. I, once again, like Bill Maher, I'm ready to take whatever. But
right,
while all this outpouring was going on, I brought up the fact that I was surprised, and I said the funny thing is, of all the people that are now praising John McCain, I think I have the most credibility because I actually voted for him. I don't think a majority of the commentators, especially on CNN and on MSNBC, who are now exalting John McCain, ever liked him or ever voted for him. So in my mind, I said, hey, I have every right to say, yeah, I agree with this, because I actually voted for him.
Right.
You know.
Well, and I think, you know, I think also, like, the thing John McCain and his funeral and, you know, I guess, for lack of a better term, all the pomp and circumstance around it, I mean, it's not that different to Ted Kennedy. You know, Ted Kennedy was never president. And yes, he comes from the whole Kennedy, there's a whole legacy there behind him. But, you know, they're seen at this stage in their career, and they've given their life to service to this country. They're seen as the elder statesmen, you know, in Washington and across the nation. So I think that's part of it. You know, it's not really that dissimilar to, you know, the treatment of Ted Kennedy's death. And, you know, certainly that there was a lot of attention paid to that.
Yeah.
And that, in a way, that was this country. I mean, that's a mark in the line of.
Well, I guess my original point is that maybe Bill Maher wouldn't have taken as much heat if he hadn't made this comment right in the midst of you know, soon after Stan Lee's death. Now the argument can be that if he makes a comment a month later, then it loses its poignancy at all, because he's been dead for a month, and then why are you
bringing it up again?
Yeah, why are you bringing it up again? So it really is a you know, it's kind of a double edged sword, and that was kind of my point of the whole thing, is that I'm just wondering, as we move on here in the pop culture world, because I'll be honest with you, you know, there used to be a difference between pop culture and the culture, but I think the lines are blurred now.
I think
the pop culture is our culture. And so we have to, you know, the people come, you know, now it's all different paths and areas. There used to be a political world. There used to be an entertainment world. There used to be you know, a private world, and they were all very separate. But social media has once again just knocked down all those walls, and not only has it brought everybody into the same mix, but it's also allowed the average person to stand right up. I mean, here's Bill Maher, right? I mean, 40 years ago, if a celebrity said something, oh, a celebrity said it. But now, you know, Frank from Arizona, or Tom from Red Hook, New Jersey, says something on Twitter, and that could make it on the national news. You know, comment that somebody all of a sudden said in response to some major event gets national publication, you know, that or exposure. That is a whole new phenomenon. And like I said, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's just, I guess the question is, the bigger question is, you know, does that inhibit us, or does will we be more inhibited to share our opinions, even though that seems to be the way we're supposed to? You know, we're supposed to just share everything, or are we going to start to retract because of the potential damage?
I think that maybe public figures may be more careful about what they say. That said, as a society, I think this actually makes us express our opinions more, because as you pointed out, you know, it does. Anytime somebody says something online, you know, Joe from, right. Joliet, Illinois, right. is going, you know, is suddenly can say whatever he wants in response. And then that actually has the potential to get picked up.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
On a broader scale.
Yeah.
So, but that's not stopping anyone from having opinions. In fact, I think it's really just unleashing more and more opinions. I think it's more people who are in positions of, you know, people who are well known, people who, you know, stand to lose something, because Joe from, you know, whatever, Joliet, Illinois, is not going to lose his job necessarily over maybe he makes a comment to,
that has happened.
Actually, this is funny that we're even talking about this, because I just saw in the news, just, I think it was earlier today, some fan of someone who was watching the Today Show yesterday commented on Twitter about Savannah Guthrie's dress and said something like, what are the producers like doing to Savannah Guthrie? Why would they put her in that fugly dress? You know what fugly is?
Right,
it's a merging of two words.
Right.
Why would they put her in that fugly dress? And then they, you know, they hashtagged Savannah Guthrie or tagged her in it somehow. She actually responded and said,
that's what I mean.
I don't blame the producers. I choose my own clothing. And then there were like other celebrities who were coming to her rescue, being like, I love you, Savannah.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Cute. Whatever. But you know, look, the girl who wrote that Savannah Guthrie's dress didn't look great is obviously not going to lose her job over it, you know. But I think it's going to be a little mix of both things. I think some people are going to curb what they have to say, or, you know, maybe think about the forum when they are on Twitter or Instagram or blogging on the internet, because sometimes these things just, I mean, your intention is not for something to create a big controversy, and then that's what ends up happening. Yeah. But then I think for other people, this is empowering them. The way that we live right now, and the presence of social media and how it's become so ingrained in our culture, I think is empowering people to be more vocal about what they think. So,
well, that's
it's
the
a mixed
question.
Bag,
though.
I think
that's what. Well, that's. I mean, I guess that's great that, as I said before, it's great that we have the ability to do that. But I think that people then also have to worry, or at least they should think about the consequences, and they get back to what Bill Maher did. He has every right to say it, and if he wanted to, as I said, dust up, you know, create a dust up, he certainly did that. But if this does turn into something that, you know, if harms his career, then he shouldn't be surprised by that, because you have to really look at what you're attacking and what you're saying and say, okay, maybe if I hit send, I know I'm going to be offending a certain amount of people. And like you said earlier, maybe he's underestimating the impact of a Stan Lee and the impact and the popularity of comic books. And he does risk the sounding like the grumpy old man in my day. But at the same time, that's his opinion, and I'm sure he'll stand by it. But I just look at the bigger picture of this, and I'm saying, wow, you know, here's somebody that was, you know, had popularity with this group, and as soon as he said something out of the party line, he gets attacked. And I guess so that's the bigger message or the bigger cautionary tale is, you know, it just seems like we support people until they don't agree with us. And then
that's right.
And then we
then
really,
that's it, you're out.
And then we really pounce. I don't know if that's just a, you know, something of our time now, or if that's going to be how things continue to progress in the future. But I guess the saddest part from my standpoint, as someone who enjoys discourse, and I enjoy even playing the devil's advocate in an argument.
Oh, yes.
We don't. Yeah, but my, and that's why, because I enjoy a good conversation. And I guess what I'm feeling is that we don't have room for discussion anymore, because if you don't agree with me, you shut me out. Not you. I'm just saying in general.
Right.
The way that we have discourse today is, if I don't agree with you, then I'm stupid, I'm ignorant, and it's okay to call me a vulgar name, and right. you walk away. And that is A, that's not the way that we should be treating each other, but B, it's certainly not the way that we actually get to hear many different points of view to help us make our own point of view and help us make our decisions. So instead of just reacting knee-jerk way, which I think most people do today, because they're not taking time to collect all the facts and to really think about what they're saying or how they feel, they are just reacting viscerally. And that's why we're calling each other names and we're saying you're bad and I'm good. And so...
Well, all I can say is it is a good thing that you are not on Twitter. Let's keep it that way.
Oh, no. Like I said, I've had a Twitter account for a long time, but I can't even remember.
But you're not really on it.
I'm never on it. I never posted anything, and I can't even remember my password to get on anyway.
Right.
It's been so long. Okay. And on that note, we will say thank you to Emily. It's good to hear your voice strong as well as your opinions.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. And so that ends another episode, number 133, to be exact, of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your listening and podcasting pleasure. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did. This is Elton Jim Toronto. This is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.